Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, August 5th, 2000. In the fireside room this afternoon, we have Ori Polly. And today's session number is POO2001 and is entitled Stewardship of the Columbia River System. Let's listen in.
Articles that I've gotten out of the Oregonian paper, the state paper in Oregon, and then while I've been here, I've gotten articles out of the Seattle Times, so I've been here a couple of weeks. And I don't know, where are, you know, we find the articles in paper nearly every day about the Columbia, what's happening in the Columbia River system and that kind of stuff. Where are you from? I know that Audrey's from Calgary, Canada. You're from Hungary. Where? Sir?
Excuse me.
Where are you from? Where are you from?
No.
Where do you live?
I live east of Seattle. East side. It's the east side of Seattle.
East side of Seattle. Where are you from?
San Diego.
San Diego?
Seattle.
Seattle, okay. I'm from Portland, Oregon. Anyway, this is very, very much in the news where we are, and especially this year, it's been more covered because of some of the solutions. Breaching dams is a big one for some environmental groups, and certainly Governor Kitzhaber, who's the governor of Oregon, is very environmental and is actually came out supporting breaching of the dams for the Snake River, which all the other Northwest governors, Montana, Idaho, Washington, were just, no, you know, how could you do this? So anyway, there's news articles, and they range from just all sorts of viewpoints on the dams and on what the river system. Or, and let's see, viewpoints would be editorial pages about dams that have already been breached. There are about 400 dams in this country that have already been breached, small dams.
What does that mean, breached?
Breached means cutting, some are rather allowing the water that's being held back by the dam to get through. They have to cut a section of the dam out some way so the water can go back, can get through the dam, so there's no leg behind the dam anymore. That's breaching. And they probably are going to sometimes leave the dam partially there. You know, they're not going to take the, you know what I didn't do? I didn't do this. Hi, this is Ori Polly, session one, talking about the stewardship of the Columbia River system. Roll them. Breaching is, we'll talk about that, just means not having the lake, no longer the lake formed by the dam. The water is allowed to flow. And there's a lot of, some remove part of the dam and some remove the whole thing. Depends how big it is. The dams on the Snake are far bigger. There are four dams on the Snake, four federal dams. They're far bigger than any of the other dams that have been breached. So if we get to the video today, the video is from a group, environmental group called Save Our Salmon, which has very narrow view in that they are supporting the breaching of the dams on the Snake. And what they show in the video, which they gave me, is that it's very simple to breach the dams. That's how they show it. There are news articles. Hi, come on in. And feel free to get especially these two right here, because we're going to talk about them. Depends on your viewpoint. There is a news article here from someone who works with the BPA or Corps of Engineers that says this is not easy. Taking the dam down, breaching it, is definitely not easy. And we'll talk about that too. It actually destroys the habitat for like 10 years at least, which what happens to the salmon runs when during those 10 years. So there's also some articles about other species that are at risk. And besides the infamous, what we're talking about in the Columbia? What's the species in the Columbia that people get really concerned about?
Salmon.
Salmon. Okay, it's salmon. And there are other species that are even coming out in the newspaper that are also that are part of the food web. And when you damage, when the food web is damaged, that when something is taken out, that it affects the entire food web. Anyway, well, this is. I'll show you this fish. This fish is actually. This fish has a story. This is not a salmon, is it?
No.
It is a what?
I'm a cat.
Catfish. Okay, it has whiskers like a catfish. Okay, this is, I actually saw. This is a body bag. You could go into. When I was in Walmart one day last spring, I saw somebody carrying out a salmon under their arm to the cashier, and I thought, oh, look at that, and I didn't think about this class at the time, and then when I was organizing this class, I thought, gee, that would be good, you know, like, let's blow it out of proportion, although, you know, salmon got this big, right?
Years ago.
Yes. So I went back to find one of these fish, and I contacted every Walmart in all of the Willamette Valley. And the only one thing they have, they also have other things. They had catfish, no salmon were there. They said those salmon always migrated out of the store very rapidly, okay? People picked those salmon up. So there were catfish, shark, and bass. And so I just got one of them. Actually, so I got this just for just as a symbol. The salmon is a, you know, it could be the catfish, is the symbol for the Pacific Northwest, you know, just as well as the salmon. And I don't even know if there are catfish in our rivers, are there? I assume so. There are bottom fish, certainly sturgeon are there. But it is in the same class as salmon. So it is, I mean, it's very closely related to salmon. Anyway, this can be our, you know, our icon, our symbol. Certainly it has been for Northwesterners. Now we think more of the salmon than we do, it's also a marker species, which means that if the ecosystem is damaged in some way, we can look at this species, let's say this is a salmon, and we can tell if the entire ecosystem is in some way damaged, the habitat is damaged. Just like the spotted owl is used to study old growth timber, except that we love the salmon more than the spotted owl. So people would rather, you know, they can focus on the fish. Okay, well, it's not just the salmon we're looking at. So let me point out what's here and the facts that you have. First of all, let me show you some books. This book is in our bookstore, and this is the reason. It's called The River Lost. It's the reason that I'm teaching this class. Written by a journalist who grew up in the Columbia River Basin. His dad worked at building the Grand Coulee Dam and other projects up there, all during the time he was growing up. Because he's a journalist, he writes it in a more objective way. And he goes out on the barges, and he visits with the people driving the barges, and they're griping about this and that, about, you know, whatever group they think isn't fair about the Columbia River system. Anyway, he also goes to, you know, all, he goes to all the different groups involved, the Indians, BPA, Corps of Engineers, the barge companies, Lewiston, Idaho, and so on. It's a good book. And I asked Brendan to make more copies, to get more copies. Another one is a book that is an excellent book called Salmon Without Rivers. It's not in our bookstore. It is the primary book that is being used by people who are saying that habitat care is the way to go. Habitat restoration. Governor Kitzhaber is definitely a supporter of this book. And it's written only about the fish, essentially, from although it discusses the life cycle and how the hatchery is affected and so on. There's a magazine, Sierra, which has an excellent article, April 2000, Sierra Club article, that is from everything I researched, everything it says is right on. There is just, they don't miss a beat in this article, a very well-rounded article. Another book is one I picked up here, actually, Earth in the Balance, written by Gore, which was Al Gore, which I think was written about 10 years ago. And actually, this book is the only book I've seen that discusses stewardship. Al Gore is a Christian, and there's a good 5 pages on stewardship in here. And he is right in tune with everything else that I read. I was very impressed with what I saw in his book. And I had bought this book, had started it, and hadn't finished it. And then when I looked in it for stewardship, and there it was, a number of pages. So if you want to look at this book, and in the back in the index, you'll find the pages. And it's excellent. Other resources. The music is from Woody Guthrie. He was commissioned by Bonneville, by the federal government, to write music about the Columbia in 1941, and they took him around to all the sites, all the dam sites. And so that's, like I said, this is a new edition this year from his work. And I don't know very many of the songs, but they're pretty. I mean, like, some of these songs are like, we've got the biggest thing that man has ever done. Now, what's that?
Damn.
The Grand Coulee. Jackhammer Blues. Song of Coulee Dam. Anyway, Roll On Columbia, Roll On is well known. Interesting music. Now, let me talk about these handouts that I gave you. If you can please keep them if you find them meaningful. If you don't, please return them, because I'm going to have other sessions. There's one handout that shows you where the dams are, and we're talking about shows you the Snake River, the 4 dams there, which they're talking about taking out. And then there's the Columbia River, the dam's there, and when it makes that west turn through the Hanford site and up into the north, up to the Grand Coulee Dam. So that's one map. On the back of this is a place you can write if you want to, of some things we're going to talk about. And at the bottom, if you want to contact somebody about your views, I think that the main power group, the agency, is the National Marine Fisheries Service, and I'll explain about that, and also your congressman, whoever they are. It doesn't matter what state you're in. This is going to be decided, the dam breaching is going to be decided by the federal government, by Congress. So it's very political. And there is a problem with the politics because people in other parts of the country are basically jealous of the Northwest for having the cheapest power. And there is much talk about from the Easterners about having a common cost for electricity all over the country. So they're not very understanding about our concerns about salmon. Because they figure we've got it good anyway here. So it's important to remember that I was hoping some Midwesterners would come so that we would hear what their take is on it. And let's see.
Well, let me tell you,
yeah.
You haven't heard what's happening in San Diego.
Okay.
We're the first city to have the deregulation go into effect, and our electric bills have doubled in a month. We have on the news every single day, papers are full of it, instead of this, of interviewing old ladies and old men who are afraid they're going to have to unplug their
breathing
machines.
How long has this been in the news?
In the last month, just our last 1 month's electric bill.
Now, you get much of the power from us.
Probably.
We don't
make our own.
The BPA covers all of the West United States, really.
But we're talking old ladies on fixed income.
Right.
Who say, you know, I'm not using my stove anymore, I can't even turn a fan on, never
Because they, it cost too much.
Because their bills have gone from
part of the problem
$24 to $100 in unaffected income.
Part of the problem is they have so many people and they don't have cheap sources of energy and they have to buy it from someplace. And therefore, it's going to cost them more.
But before deregulation, we had fairly
Well, you're going to see that all over the country.
So everybody is saying San Diego is just the first city to come under the deregulation and all the others are going to follow suit. And what I heard on the Seattle TV station just the other night was, don't gloat now, Seattle, because you will face in the winter what San Diego
is currently facing in the summer, and the prices. And that would mean that the federal government is allowing that to be raised.
But I mean, it's all just such a, I mean, I've
come to share power.
Washington for 10 years, and I love the Columbia.
Well, there's a lot of other issues besides the, you know,
but it's just
complex.
Such a circle.
Right, money is one part of it. Okay, backside of that, we'll get into later about current problems and so on. And fact sheet, if you look at that, let's see. Before I get to that, let me share with you. My background is I have a degree in biology and a degree also in chemistry and also at the master's degree level. And I choose to teach kids that are middle school science, integrated science. So that's what I've been doing. And this is not an adversarial time here. This is I vision it as information, just like you're sharing. And I can share because I've done a lot of research. And okay. Down there on the facts, things that I want you to notice. The second fact is about the Columbia River system has a naturally heavy glacier-fed summer flow. That piece of information makes it especially great for salmon. When we start messing with the speed and the coldness and the amount of water in the Columbia River, then we start messing with at least salmon. And then the one below that, federal government's Bureau of Reclamation started damming the CRS in the 30s to provide jobs. And probably we're all aware of that. And also it's politics. It was FDR's politics. And Woody Guthrie was pulled right into it. Down below, it says, a couple down, it says, all dams have fish screens. I've done this research, and so I know this is what they told me. It wasn't easy to find this, by the way. All dams have fish screens on turbines for juveniles. All dams except Chief Joseph and Grand Coulee, which are the top north ones, have fish ladders, because those two dams are too tall. So a fish ladder would be stretched out too far for them to be able to do that. And Bonneville Dam has an experimental collect diversion system, which is a little bit different than a way to get the fish around to divert them. The turbines, screens, is just simply, the fish can still hit the screen. It just can't go into the turbine. So a fish that hits the screen, usually as its swim bladder, its body is impacted, and usually its swim bladder bursts, which means it loses ability to orient in the water, and essentially it's going to die. So it's just because it has a screen, it doesn't mean it's 100% okay. Notice the next one down, before BPA dams, the stream flow time from Lewiston, Idaho, which is the port, is the what they're trying to get to on the barges. It was 2 days. With the dams, it's 2 weeks. Now that's just water molecules. Young fish without dams can reach the sea in less than 1 week. With dams, they have to work much harder and they have to find their way because the water's slower. So they have to figure out where they're going, where's the flow. And it can take them up to 2-3 months. Those fish don't eat, by the way, in that time. Those fish do not eat. They have a yolk sac and they are not genetically equipped to fit to eat as they go out. So it's definitely what happens to some of those juveniles that they die because it takes too long for them to get out. Okay, what else? Then it talks, the last item on the front page talks about how many salmon, juvenile salmons actually make it out to the ocean. And backside, the four H's on the top, This is, if you talk to anybody who is talking ecology, they're going to say, well, the salmon is affected by habitat. These are the causes of the problem of the numbers of salmon. Habitat damage, hatcheries, which don't really create salmon juveniles that are going to be able to survive, and I'll explain that. Hydropower demands too much, and harvest, which means harvesting of commercial harvest and also pleasure harvest. The damage caused by each age is inversely proportional to the money made off the age in question. And I think we know that salmon are anadromous fish moving from fresh to salt water, which is so hard to track them. We have not successfully tracked salmon. They go thousands of miles out in the ocean. So that makes it especially difficult to figure out. For a long time, they just didn't know why they came back or where they went. Let's see. Drop down to about six down, it says, salmon hatcheries produce and add 80 million juvenile salmon a year to the Columbia River system to replenish the salmon lost. And hatcheries produce salmon with restricted genotypes. Now that means that they get males, they get females, and they get the eggs out of them. They dam up a stream. It depends where they've got hatcheries, right? Probably streams close to the hatcheries. They dam up the stream so they can collect fish, and they get the eggs out of the female, and then they get the milt, the sperm, out of the males, and therefore they have certain females and certain males with certain genetic information, and actually they're the ones that are coming right back to the hatchery that are therefore going to give all the offspring. And so we no longer have diversity of genetic information, which always in science means in life forms that it's never as good as having all the diversity of DNA, because when conditions change, hatchery fish can't adapt. Hatchery fish even come to the surface when they think it's time for food, and when it's actually not a friend there at all. And they dump, by the way, they dump their hatchery fish in. They dump fish from stream X into stream B. So they found that they can't do that because each stream has its own genetic stock. It's actually genetically specific. And the hatchery fish they don't survive well in the wrong stream. So, and all this hatchery information was, for years, one of the biggest problems is that in the States, that here in the Northwest, we did not study the science of the fish before we took action and developed hatcheries. And our hatcheries still don't come up even with loss. They still, with dumping 80 million fish in a year, they still don't come up because they dump them in miscellaneous streams, and they dump them also all a big, huge amount in one, and then they compete with the natural fish that were there hiding out in the shadows and whatever. So the natural fish, the wild fish, can't survive as well. Down a couple more, and I think all these facts are important, but the federal government established Hanford nuclear site as a secret site in World War II to develop the plutonium bomb. And it continues as a factor for nuclear waste storage and nuclear work. And it's currently the top health hazard in the USA. One of these articles talks about Hanford Reach as being made a national monument. Now, that's the area of the Columbia that is right along the Hanford site. And it's not dammed because it couldn't be dammed because it was Hanford site. And literally, I didn't realize they took out this tiny, all the people in Hanford, tiny town, were told to leave. And then 50,000 people were brought in there to work on the nuclear development of plutonium. And it's, it's amazing. But we definitely have, the river now has collected nuclear power issues, and although none of the nuclear power plants are now functioning, they've all been shut down along the river. Two main things, probably. The Nuclear Power Act of 1980 caused a huge change. So that's one of the acts. It forced the BPA, the Bureau of Reclamation, the Corps of Engineers, to work together with themselves and the Indian tribes and the fish agencies. It forced them to form a council. So finally, in 1980, since we've been here, you know, since what, the 1700s, finally, we're getting these groups to the table and getting input. The other one that's a big act was, of course, the 1990 Endangered Species Act, which has revolutionized the Columbia River system as far as care of the habitat. It demands that anything that is threatened that is going to have to be taken care of. The agencies can't get away from it. So that's been the Endangered Species Act has been the biggest friend as far as as far as caring for the river or the ecosystem of the river. And the Indians, they rely upon legal. That's how they get their needs met. That has been consistent. They go the legal way to get their rights met. There's actually law that's in 1855 that says that from U.S. government that we cannot build any structure that prevents salmon from moving through the river system. Never enforced, but it was actually on the books. Okay, that's information on that. And just any questions on those facts? Just comments.
I think the Hanford nuclear site is a real beast.
Yeah.
The way it's leaching into the river.
Yeah, and they could measure the leaching. And it's hard to know where the truth is because the government says, oh, when they had that, wasn't there a fire up there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They had a fire and they said it was getting real close. And,
right.
And so the government said, oh, no problem. You know, it's no problem. It's not causing anything. Well, another source said, wait a minute. We've measured and it has affected the air pollution, I think. Mm-hmm. There was more radiation in the air. Okay. Anything else?
Yes. Well, seventh down on the back side here, it says the farmers could use as much water or electricity as they wanted at nearly zero cost.
Yeah.
And then if it's doubled in San Diego, why has it doubled in San Diego? Because they per contract for water?
It's a subsidy from the American government. The irrigation, reading about the irrigation, the farmers, initially, the Columbia River Basin Project, I think, initially, the goal was to help small farmers, to get water. And so what the government did was, federal government said, oh, we'll pay for it now, and we'll get the canals and the system to you, and then you can pay us back in 10 years. Well, what's happened is, they can never pay it back. Essentially, they made it, oh, you don't have to pay back for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. Right now it's 50 years that those small farmers who have gotten much bigger, they've essentially secretly or whatever gotten a ton of land more. They're also selling their electricity off of their own property. They're selling it out, making money off of it, and essentially they're getting all the water they want.
It doesn't cost them anything.
And no, essentially it doesn't cost anything. I guess that they asked this recently for some more water, and the government said no, which is unusual.
Yeah.
But I thought the irrigation issue was... I guess they were really extreme that they've gotten, I think, because they were in the forefront. And considering it was only 4,000 families they were looking at, I might say something too that is just in common as a biologist. If you've driven through eastern and central Washington along the Columbia River, you see green, and then you see where it totally stops, the green stops, and you see totally brown, and there's no in between. And it's like what's happened is they've changed a biome. which is very dangerous to do. Biome is a certain type of the Earth's surface that has certain animals, certain plants, certain weather. And so there's a desert biome, which is a sagebrush desert biome, which is up in the central Columbia Basin area. And what they've done is they've added water to it, and they've changed it to a grassland biome. But to change it like that takes an incredible amount of energy to continue it. And also, there is some indication that these farmers' produce is not necessarily valuable. In other words, they are also getting subsidies for the grain they're making. It's excess. It's not valuable crops that they're making there. It's crops that we have enough of. That makes sense. So there's a question as to whether or not we should even be doing that there.
The whole thing that you're talking about, if you look at all of Southern California, Los Angeles,
right.
San Diego, then
right.
you look at
right.
Phoenix and Tucson and yeah. Las Vegas.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, it's all artificial.
It's choices.
It's green,
mm-hmm.
it's being watered
right.
and paid for by.
Well,
it's not natural.
It's, right, and it's choices.
And how long? I mean, the whole water resource.
Right, and it's choices. Right, it's we only have limited resources.
There can't be enough water to support what we've got now.
It's pretty astounding.
And they continue to build and build.
But I have a question to understand what you said. Yes, in the Northwest has a rate of 5.1 cents per kilowatt.
I wish I knew.
And the average is 8.5.
Right, was
yeah.
Why
this
not,
is 90,
you don't go for,
but this is 97.
Yeah, but still, it's not that different.
But essentially,
the average didn't change that much.
No.
So that's a piece of 30%.
What didn't change?
That average didn't change that much.
Well, but see, deregulation is just now.
Yes, and I don't know anything about how much.
Within the last few
but
weeks.
But the other average don't get from dams, their power. They get it from power plants.
Right, and so it costs more to get
yeah, it's but not that much more, that's what I understand.
Right.
And
right.
by the way, even here in that cheap area, with electricity, gas is still cheaper. Natural gas is still cheaper than electricity.
Oh, yeah, we pay a lot.
So we have other sources.
We have other sources, but they're all more expensive than hydro power, electricity. And if we deregulate, it's going to be all over the country.
Right.
And so it's going to affect the Northwest as well as any place else. Let's take a look at stewardship to get back on this one, I think. Are there any other questions on that fact sheet? Okay, stewardship. Well, this is the research I did on stewardship. And God says, God says in Genesis 1:31, God saw everything that God made, and behold, it was very good. An important thing here, I think, is who owns it? Who made it? God did. And also the Indians look, our Northwest Indians look as a culture at gifts to them, that things are gifts to them. And we tend to use demand things as our culture. Genesis, also stewardship, God says, Genesis 2:15, the Lord God took and placed the human in the Garden of Eden to serve it and protect it. So it gets the idea that humans are to care for creation, and it's a gift from God to us. In Chronicles, 1 Chronicles 16, there's a big long section in there, 7:37 plus, that is about praise, just praising God for all of his creation. And in talking, praising and glorifying God, and in talking with pastors, did you need something?
No, I'm her grandma. She's
okay.
Just
in talking with pastors, this glorify God, and you do that by caring for the earth, was something that came out a lot. Nicene Creed talks about, again, glorifying God. Take a look at when you say it. It's got a part about who made it. Again, divine. And the Catholic, one of the pastors, Lutheran pastors, showed me to this Catholic bishop's pastoral letter, which I got on the computer. It's copies of it are over there. I got excerpts of different parts. I think it's absolutely excellent. As far as a statement, it's really put together well. It is, and where do I have that? It's the one that, you see that one?
Well,
it looks
on the top of this.
It's a staple item, and it's if you read that through, I wish that more religious groups would do this, especially the leadership. They put a lot of effort into this. This is what is this? This is not a finished product. This is, it's going to be released in October 2000. And it is, I think you can get this if you have a computer, you can get it from, I can't remember what this was in. Well, you can see it. It's called the Columbia, the address is right there at the bottom of one of the pages. And what was I going to? The Pope is quoted, and I thought his quotes were, again, right on. And some of it was from Catholic writings. And, so I think this is a good resource. Obviously, they have enough time and energy to do this. So any comments about, you want to look through that for a moment? This pastoral project letter, just kind of flip through it. I'm just going to mention it. It's something that backs up ecosystems and backs up that the web of life, and that if you must care for it all. Well put together, and we need to have more groups doing this. Let's see what else I've got here. Maybe I can.
It doesn't say when it was written.
This is, I think it's current. Let's see. It's as far as they've gotten to release it. 7/21/2000. That's when I got it.
Okay. On the last page, on the third paragraph down, there's certain, I mean, not just skim, but that's certainly is interesting part. People are part of the natural world, not separate from it.
Oh, that's a good point.
They need to alter that world at times to provide for their needs.
Right.
Appropriately designed and integrated human alterations to the landscape can work with the existing and evolving ecosystem. And it goes on to say, can't we just all get along, to quote. We become attuned to its natural rhythms, consciousness,
okay, here's another.
You know, that's pretty practical. It's not saying nature is safe, is so sacred that, I mean, don't eat it, don't touch it, don't, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're
a part of
this thing together, and it was given to serve us.
This is what I'm sharing here. This
we are charged with taking care of.
A stewardship is not dominion over.
Right.
It's a common thing. You know, that's a Judeo-Christian thinking style. So it's not surprising that dominion over is read as we are quote unquote lording over. Dominion over sets up negative, sets up a view that human needs and wants have priority over nature. And it also sets up that humans are separate from nature. And these things are not where Genesis is talking about it. And it's not what also the bishops and the Catholic Church were looking at. And forces against stewardship, I just listed some, greed, self-involvement, where you get such narrow vision. You've got a farm of 4,000 acres and you irrigate it, and you don't want to lose that income. Short-term exploitation, you want to make some bucks, maybe it's logging, and you cut the trees. You cut the trees down and let them lay in the creek bed, riverbed, until spring, and then they'd be washed down to the logging mill. Lack of leadership, this happens certainly in federal government, state government, general sin, we as human beings being incomplete, competing imperatives, which means like, we want to have fishermen in Oregon be able to have a livelihood. At the same time, you want to take care of the environment. Well, they may be conflicting, and we're going to have to give somewhere. And maybe nature loses out. And nature has lost out on that. Okay, what do we got here? Here's some other things about stewardship that I thought were important. Important realities about stewardship. Nature is protected and cared for when it is united with people who love it. Now, a lot of this comes from Gore. It's the united part. Again, we're not separate. We're together. The future of human civilization depends on our stewardship of the environment as well as our stewardship of freedom. We may be free, but have a totally trash environment. So that idea of caring for the environment, we can see at some point, we all know about the idea of self-destructing our planet with nuclear bombs. Fight for freedom and you lose a lot more. Freedom of peoples is needed for effective stewardship. So if you look at people in countries like Honduras, whatever, countries in the world where the people are run by essentially a dictator government, they aren't free to care for things. And this idea is saying that in order to really be effective at stewardship, you need to be free to be able to take care of the earth where you are. We think we need to stop our dysfunctional thinking about our role in God's universe. This whole idea that we're supposed to have dominion over and we're supposed to be separate and we have special rights over other animals. Any comments about that, about stewardship? And the deal is, it doesn't mean all or nothing. Sometimes we're going to hurt the ecosystem by our choices. We can hurt it less. Okay, now, let me see if I can. The next part is. Okay. What does the river give us naturally? This is where you come in. I want to spend some time listing. What does the river give us naturally? What does the Columbia River and all the streams give us?
Recreational use.
Okay. Creation. Okay. What else does it give us naturally? We don't have to, push it. It just does it.
Beauty.
Yeah. Okay.
The spiritual qualities.
He provides transportation.
Okay, transportation.
Food source.
Food. Any other ones? I'd say.
It's a water resource.
Okay. Provides water, obviously.
But it also defines communities.
Okay, like what?
Well,
these communities form along the river?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Defines.
And the Indians used in this community?
Okay, culture, I'd say. And the Indians are like, that's really true for them. But it also defines, spell it wrong, IES. It's also true for any of the other people that live along the river, towns. Now, if you look at the river towns along the way, why are they there? Partly because of the fish. I also included one of my all-time favorite pictures of places, and that's the Saliva Falls, which truly, when it's buried now, and by the Dalles Dam in about 1957, and even I'm not an Indian, but I just experienced great. And it's only one place. I mean, if you read Lewis and Clark, where the rivers, the Snake, and the Columbia came together, what they saw there, not only did they save their lives, the Indians saved their lives because of all the food that was there, but they saw an immense trading going on among a mixture of all the Indians needing to trade. And it's lost. It's totally gone. Covered by the water. Okay, anything else? I think we pretty much covered. Probably got some mechanical energy for factories, water wheels, that kind of stuff too, that we got from the river.
Well, they don't have power, do you?
That would be it. Power would be from the water wheels.
Well, it also provides wetlands for your ducks.
Okay, it provides also, let me say,
natural habitat.
I'll just, that's good. It does it all by itself. We don't have to make it, push it, or anything. Okay, now we're going to take a look at what we humans want the river to provide for us. What we demand from the river, not necessarily what's natural given, not naturally given, but what we demand, what we take from the Columbia River system. And some of these were on what we just talked about. For example, somebody said transport. Okay, I'll just write that one down. Okay. Now, how do we get transportation on? Well, we can build, I put plus and minus effects of that. We can, with dams, it's almost all in Life Bell's dams. With dams, can
navigate areas.
Can barge to Lewiston, Idaho. And they advertise that, hey, they are the farthest east seaport of the Pacific Ocean. Okay, and that's a plus about the dams. What's a minus with that same action? The dams kill most salmon runs. They've already done it. Or they are threatened or endangered. So that's, and within that, those dams were put in 60s, essentially 60s, and maybe like 50s, essentially 60s. And in that 20 years, that has happened, is that they've killed or reduced. Okay, anything else you could think of that, if it's a plus, that essentially it's dams?
Well, a minus is pollution.
Okay, transportation, pollution in the, because of the barges.
Because of the barges,
okay.
Or ships. Or
okay, we've got this, we've got this. Okay, another one is done. It is, has got the dams, and it slowed the river. And if you slow the river, it raises the temperature, and raises temperature, and that causes the fish that live in a very narrow range to be definitely affected. Raises a temp, and it's a big long spiral that happens. Once further. Okay, but in the goal, by the way, just a little comment, that transportation they get produces only about 25 jobs in Lewiston for barges. That's what I read, and if they did that, they left those dams, took the dams out. By the way, well, took the dams out, they would have a whole bunch of thousands of jobs in recreation and fishing, sport fishing, for that area. So even though the dams sound good, actually Lewiston is a train hub, and the other kind of transportation was already there before they put in those dams, and that was the trains. They run right along the Columbia Gorge, and their trains are about twice as expensive as the barges right now, but they're not saving any jobs. But also, just a comment, those dams on the Snake, from what I read, they do not provide irrigation, essentially, because they have to be kept too high. They do not provide, what else, besides irrigation, hydro, because they can't spill very much over because they have to be kept high. It's the way that they're built, the style. So there's no hydro, no irrigation. What else do we get from dams? But they slow down fish. I mean, those dams give us 5% of the hydropower for the entire BPA, the dams on the Snake. So the reason they're talking about breaking those dams is because
they're not meaningful dams in terms of electricity. You talk about doing that down below. Nobody's saying, hey, let's take any of those other dams on the Columbia. Nobody's talking about those. That's because they're not, they're important. So what's another thing we use? We've got transportation. I won't do all these. Maybe I'll... It's another way that we what we demand from the river.
Well, the whole power thing, but that
okay. Electricity, and that's okay. Here's another one: electricity, and it comes back to the dams. And certainly, people in California and in place else are real interested in us doing it. Another one. I guess I'm gonna go this way.
I'm originally from the Midwest, so I'm more familiar with the Missouri and the Mississippi. A lot of the dams that were built there were for flood control. Was that much of an issue on the Columbia?
Oh, Columbia, I'll tell you, on the Snake River, there's no flood control either. Those dams on the Columbia, on the Snake, no, there's no flood control. On the Columbia, that does help. Ones that I know, I also went through, and I don't think I'm going to take time to do that. We demand from the Columbia now irrigation, with a canal, fish for commercial and sport fishing, and the Indians have rights that they demand. In fact, if those fish, if those salmon go extinct, if any of our salmon go extinct, which the Indians are going to collect on that, billions on that, because we broke a treaty. That's what I'm reading. And some businesses are saying that they would really like to extend the research, extend the data collection long enough so that all the salmon will go extinct. Then there won't be this big hassle with taking care of the habitats.
Right.
Yeah, so there is a definite push by some of the industry actually to want the salmon to be out of the picture. Let's see, other things. We get prevents floods, you said, shipping, industry, certainly aluminum. Industry used to cite, that's one of the reasons we had the Hanford mm-hmm. plant, and Boeing made something like half the airplanes for World War II. Yeah, because of the aluminum plants in the Seattle area. Political gain is also something they took from the river, from FDR. And also the New Deal and the fact that there was government control. The government got more control from this area because they had the Columbia Basin Project and all that kind of stuff. What else? Now I want to get harder into it. Okay.
I love your good stickies. I've never seen this before.
What was that?
I love your big stickies. I've never seen yellow stickies.
I also found out something that I forgot about, is that once I write on these, next time I do it, I guess I'll just show them done. That's what I do. I've used it. Okay. What do you know about current problems that we have? Current Columbia River system problems. You've got
salmon.
Okay. Threatened salmon. And it's, what else?
And other fish.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Although most people don't care about those other fish. I mean, and
yeah, but
habitat.
Yeah, the food chain.
Which is, you know, it could be all the way from crane flies or stone flies that the salmon feed on. Fly fisherman knows about that, knows. Anything of current other problems?
The Hanford leaching.
Okay.
Well, how about increased power costs that she brought up?
Not any problems. Power demands. Just and the power grid, maybe. The whole power grid pressure. I mean, we're all connected on that. The pressure that.
Is there political pressure between the states? Like there is, I'm familiar again with the Colorado. I mean, California fights Arizona and
Mexico. What's happening? The power grid is organized by BPA, Bonneville Power, and they make their own decisions on that.
But I mean, as far as other Columbia River problems, are there...
Now they go to the table.
Do Oregon and Washington and
work together? They're starting to. In fact, just...
agendas or...
Just within the last... There are one of these articles here, and I just will talk about it now. The latest information... Somewhere I put that. It's up on the wall there in the middle. The latest information, which was really exciting to see, and I credit it to Kids Upper again, is that Northwest Governor, this was on the 28th, July 28th, and Northwest Governors jointly proposed salmon strategy. This is the first time in the history of this country that these four states are actually going to work together, and they are coming to the table, and they all lose something. They don't get it their way, because the goal is again habitat, is habitat protection, and it says in the article that everybody lost something for the good of the habitat of the Columbia. And I think that's the only way it's going to work is leaders are going to have to take a stand and be willing to give up something and give up things that aren't as important as other things. And we're starting to see this with the governors. Of course, politics change the governors. But this agency, if you read this article, it talks about they're going to actually set up an agency that's going to make that decision for the states. And it's there's a way to do that somewhat non-politically. The other exciting thing is not only the governors, which is exciting, but this National Marine Fisheries Service, which has been established since actually the 1970s. There was a judge that told them, get to work. A judge said, you've been doing nothing for the last, it was in the 90s that this judge, Marsh, this judge said, told them, you're coming up with nothing. You know, you've made statements that say, like, the dams don't make any difference to the salmon population, and this judge said, you go back and do your homework and represent this, do what you're supposed to be doing here. And so the National Marine Fisheries did do that. It went back and did its research and came out with a statement which was more true of the situation. And so that group came up with its most recent final statement on the 28th, which I loved it. It must be doing something right, because the extreme environmentalists went boo-hiss. Mm-hmm. And then the extreme, don't get anything. Some of the congressmen, there's a Washington one and an Oregon one that both are just, don't do nothing to give up jobs, for those salmon. But if they're griping about it, that's good. It means that we're hitting some middle ground. And so there's both of these articles are there and worth reading, because the deal is, it's not just the dams here. It's not just the fish here. This is something, it's a conflict that as humans we're going to have to face everywhere. It's called the planet Earth would be damaged by how we treat it. And we are able in the Northwest we're not gone too far yet. We haven't gone too far. Certainly we've gone too far for the Indian culture. It's been decimated by what's happened. But something, the Columbia River is the most powerful river in this country. That's because it has the biggest drop in a certain length. It absolutely would have been used for dams. Absolutely. It's logically, it should be used for dams. It's just that this is an example of where you compromise. And there are ways to dam the river that will damage the habitat less. And I've always said it is. It's a river that's gonna get it. It's gonna be dammed. Certainly. But the hatcheries problem, actually, the one solution is that the hatcheries need to go back and rethink the entire thing they do with the hatcheries, because their process of getting the juveniles produced from fertilization and how they dump them in the streams. Now, Canada has done that successfully up in the Fraser River. This book talks about, this one, it's Salmon Without Rivers, gives a juxtaposition describing both the Fraser River and what they did up there and that system and our Columbia River system. And the huge difference, because the Canadians, did their homework, and they did their homework about biology and chemistry, where we just pretty much did what the politicians wanted us to do.
The politicians
just covered it up. I mean, as long as we were having the hatcheries, they said, great, got the hatcheries, you know, we got them. It was just mainly the hatcheries were political move here in this country. And the truth is that they're not even breaking even for the fish. And then you get into variables like, what about the ocean habitat? How does that affect things?
The dams has also a certain lifetime. When the sediment fills up, they're useless.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an estimate how long these dams are?
Oh yeah, we've got sediment building up. And in Oregon, the dams are cutting down, it's holding back the sediment. In Oregon now, in the last 10 years, I've got a beach house, and I've seen the sand naturally is being cut away from the beaches. There's now about there must be a 6-foot drop right along the beach in the area where I'm at, as compared to 5 years ago. The sand is gone. And the Columbia River, the movement of sand goes south. That's what happens. The currents make it move south. And the Columbia River's sediments aren't getting out. And that's the number one main source for sediments for the entire coast of Oregon. And if we think we've got another problem, this is another one. Sand, sediment distribution. The dams hold them back. And then it's like a whole other problem. It's like a box inside of a box inside of a box or whatever. So I need to let you go. And I would, let me see if there's anything. Actually, maybe I'll put up one thing for you to look at. And that is, well, there's long-term solutions and there's band-aid solutions that really, you know, some hatcheries are a band-aid solution. That's all. And until we make them long-term, we don't have to work. This is some of these other statements about, you think this is a simple problem?
No.
Okay, here's something that I think is meaningful to read before you go. Solution logic to remember. Every solution has negatives. Complex problems require complex solutions most of the time. People involved may not understand data or other viewpoints. Little contact. Also, the groups don't have contact. Beware of any narrow interest group, including me. And beware of those who won't negotiate for a workable solution. Nobody wants to give up anything. Be aware of anybody who won't negotiate. Times change, solutions change. Be flexible. Logic and accurate data must win over politics. Good luck. I think at some point it will. I told you about the biome change. That I think that's an example of just, that's fine if we're willing to pay the price. I don't think any of those farms are needed up there. I think they're all surplus wheat and stuff.
I've been getting my electrical bills while I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for 5.5 months.
Huh?
And they said in the fall, in September or October, I will have a choice on whether I have hydroelectric source or the wind source.
Oh, really?
And if I have practiced poor stewardship, and I'm just looking at my bank account, then will I stay with hydro source? Can wind source electricity ever be in the same price category?
Maybe. I don't think so in your lifetime.
But I'm going to have to choose. Every consumer is going to have to make a choice about the source of their electricity.
I wonder how they're using wind. As far as
they
know.
They have these, you know.
Well, I've seen the turbines.
Cool.
You must have a really windy area right there, because they've tried those. I've seen them in Palm Beach.
Well, they're here in Eastern
Palm Springs.
Washington has.
Are they still going?
Uh-huh.
Because some places they tried them and they decided they weren't economical.
They're successful. They have a big area where they.
Well, maybe you can set up your own windmill and you can generate your own electricity.
Uh-huh.
Like people used to do. Okay, I'm done and thanks for coming.